It is my pleasure to introduce our main speaker, Calvin Dee from Fargo.
Hello, everyone. My name is Kelvin Daniels. I'm an alcoholic. Sober Day of the Grace of God, Miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous, an excellent sponsorship. I've been sober since October 10th, 1996, and for that I'm truly grateful. And, thank you. One person is very excited about that besides me. Well, apparently there's two of them. I'll keep going one at a time. First of all, I'm very excited to be here. I have a lot of respect for this group, and I've got a lot of good friends here, and it's great to see Justin. Justin is one of the defects from Fargo that you guys are what is it, defectors? Well, he's not defective, you know, like we sent him here or something, you know. We kicked him out of Fargo in AA. Fargo AA, that's what it was. And it's good to see Rich and Andrew being here from Alaska, you know, it's great to see a lot of people here that I know and love. And I tell you, I had an interesting trip on the way down here tonight. I'm on the plane, and I'd say I'm a real judgmental guy. And I don't know if anybody else here is, but I am. And I'm in the airport in Minneapolis, and I'm coming in, and I go into the bathroom, and here's this guy in there. And he's got these long hippie dreadlocks, you know? And he's got this shirt on, and the first line of the shirt says, "Two beers, $7. The second line says, "Two margaritas, $15. The fourth line says, "Four jello shots, $20. And right underneath it, it says, "Taking home the girl who consumed all above, priceless." And so, of course, I'm looking at his shirt, and I'm looking at him, and I'm like, great, great, you know? And I just get on the plane, and I'm sitting in my exit row, and all of a sudden, hearing his buddy come, and they get close, and they go, "There I am, there I am, that's us." And I'm like, crap, you know? And they sit down next to me, and because I have a tendency to judge people almost immediately. And he sat down next to me, and I had my iPod out, and I was just getting ready to put the headphones on, and I realized, no, I'm going to talk to this guy. So I start talking to him a little bit, and here it turns out the guy they're here coming down for a bachelor party from Winnipeg, Manitoba, and they're coming here with 11 guys. And the guy sitting directly across the aisle from me is one of their buddies. And this guy's been around AA for a while, and he had quit going to meetings and had just stopped going to Alcoholics Anonymous, and he was on the rocks. The guy sitting next to him, who's in the aisle with me, is sitting there. Now, granted, the guy sitting next to me, the hippie guy with the dreadlocks, he'd ordered two double whiskeys and Pepsi while we were sitting there during the course of this time. And the guy sitting next to them, and we had just started talking. And by the time I realized what was going on, I'm in 12-stepping this guy in the seat next to me by the window, the guy across the aisle from me, and the guy in the middle is just pounding him back, smiling, you know. And what my judgment would have stopped me from doing. My judgment would have stopped me from talking to that guy. And that guy asked me for my phone number. Because I live in Fargo, and I'm not real far from Winnipeg. And he asked me for my phone number, and he said that he asked me if he could call him when he got back from his trip. He wasn't planning on quitting this weekend. And the guy sitting across from me, he said, you know, I haven't been going to meetings for a long time. He said, you know, people buy around where I'm from. And I do, because I'd spoken at a conference 10 miles from where this guy lives. And I know people in AA there, and I'm going to hook them up with some people when I get back home. And that's how my trip started coming here this morning. So I knew it was going to be great. And Aaron and Greg came down from Fargo with me, and we didn't come down just for this tonight. Tonight is like an extra treat for me. I'm on the way down to Laughlin. I'm talking down there this weekend. So it's kind of one of those deals where I get to come through on the way there, and it's a great deal. I wasn't one of those people ever that knew what was wrong with me growing up. Because, see, I've had the symptoms of alcoholism ever since I was a child. I've been irritable, restless, and discontent my whole life. And I was always one of those people that felt like a square peg trying to fit in a round hole. And I've also always been one of those people that never quite felt as good as you looked. Because I compare my insides to your outsides. And I had these problems with identity when I was growing up. And I had to take this aptitude test as a kid, and I'm filling out this aptitude test, and I get to the race question. My mom's white, my dad's black, so I don't know what the hell I am, because they don't have that spot on the test, so I don't know what to check off. And I hand it in, and the teacher picks it up, and she goes, who filled this out and didn't check in their race? And everybody in the class goes over and looks at me. And it was kind of a funny deal because if you really look at, like, kind of my heritage, I'm kind of like an Escalade on 20s playing polka music, you know, and it's kind of one of those deals. And I had troubles with that growing up. I didn't know quite where I fit, you know. And it was funny, I was talking over in Iceland last year, and I told those guys I was like a Viking ship with 20s on it. And then because on my mom's side, we traced all the way back to Iceland. I told a lot of the people in the room we may be cousins, and they didn't get the joke, you know. They were like, no, that ain't happening. So it was just one of those things where I'm a feeler. I'm a feeler by nature, and I remember feeling as long as I can remember. I just remember the feelings that I get from the way you look at me, and from the way that you talk to me, and the way that you treat me, and I just desperately want to feel the right way, because I am always that guy that feels like the square peg trying to fit into the round hole. And I don't know what the deal is, and I don't know how to put a finger on it. I don't know exactly how to place it. But I know when I was about 12 years old, I got a chance to drink, and that changes everything for a guy like me. Because for a guy like me, when I take a few drinks of alcohol, I get right-sized, I get right shape, and I seem to fit right in. And everything around me seemed uncomfortable, everything around me that seemed to have some type of feeling of not quite being right gets smoothed out. And all of a sudden, I can come out and play. I'm the guy that I can look you in the eye. I don't have to be afraid anymore. And no matter what's going on, I've got the answer for it. And I know exactly what to do, and I know exactly how to be, and I know exactly who to be when I've got this right stuff on board. So what happens for a person like me, when I'm doing those things, I take off with it. And I absolutely love the effect that's produced by alcohol in my life. I'm one of those people that had a nice love affair with drinking in the beginning, and then it turned very nasty, and she cheated on me in the end. And she was working for other people and not me anymore. And it was just one of those things that I couldn't figure out, because when I'm like that, I'm complete. And when I'm not like that, there's a piece of me that's missing. So my disease, as I understand it, breaks down into a couple quick things. It breaks down into the phenomenon of craving. When I take a drink of alcohol, something metaphysically happens within me that makes me crave more alcohol. I will automatically, when I take one, for a guy like me, one is too many and a thousand is not enough. When I have one, I don't know how many are going to follow. And if that was the case, because I look like a guy with a drinking problem, is exactly what I look like. I look like a guy who drinks too much. I look like a guy who gets in trouble because of his drinking. I look exactly like that. If you view me from a distance, I look like a guy with a drinking problem. I look like a guy with a problem doing drugs. I look like a guy with a problem with all those things. But the thing that I have a problem with is that if I only had a problem with those things when things started happening in my life and I started suffering these consequences, then I'd been able to stop. You think it would have been enough consequence for me to stop when my mom looked at me and said she was ashamed she ever gave birth to me? You think it would have been enough consequence for me when I'm waking up in the morning covered in blood that's not mine and not remembering where I've been? You think it's enough consequence for me when I'm sitting there and I'm going, you know, I really hate good food and hanging around with women. I'll go to jail for a while. That sounds like a good break, you know? You think that those consequences would be enough for me if I had a drinking problem. But the thing is that those consequences aren't enough for a guy that doesn't have a drinking problem. Because, see, if I had a drinking problem, those things would have fixed what was wrong with me. What's wrong with me is that I have this second aspect of my disease called the obsession of the mind. I have this thing that sits in there and tells me over and over again, it's going to be different this time. You know, really, seriously, I mean, come on now. You're overreacting. That's because you were drinking whiskey. Of course you're going to get crazy and get into a fight, you know? I mean, you need to drink tequila. No, the last time you did that, you peed in somebody's corner, you know? I mean, you need to stick with beer, you know? Well, that didn't do the trick either. And one thing after another, and I'm the guy that constantly changes those things. I'm changing my environment. I'm changing the people I'm with. I'm changing my brand. And the book talks about that very eloquently, much better than I do. And I'm doing it over and over and over again, and I'm trying to grasp somehow why it keeps happening again. Because my intentions are not to be that way. I don't ever intend to have those things happen. I don't intend to hurt people. My intentions are not based on ruining relationships. My intentions are not based on breaking that girl's heart. My intentions are not based on any of the things that happen within a guy like me. None of the things that happen with me are based on my intentions. They're all based on my actions. Because I never once woke up in the morning and asked to do any of the things that I did. I never woke up once in the morning and said, you know, tonight, when I wake up and I'm shaking and I don't have anything else to do, I'm going to strain pine saw through some bread and drink that. You don't drink pine saw for its minty freshness. You drink pine saw to get an effect because it's the only thing around. And that's where a guy like me goes. And I'm one of those people that when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm going to fast forward just for a second, I hated people in AA. I hated them because they were all nice and they were smiling all the time and they were hugging. They're huggers. And I didn't like huggers, you know? And they were just, they had all this stuff put together, and I'd hear their stories and I would sit there and I would automatically check myself off and I'm like, you're not like me. And the thing that I see happen in Alcoholics Anonymous a lot of times is everybody has this big, they have the bottom competition. Well, I did this and this. And it's like they just laid a gauntlet down and now you gotta top them, you know? Well, you know, I stole the Harley once from the Marlboro Man, you know? I mean, somebody's gotta do something. I mean, everybody's adding something onto it, you know? It's like we get a gold star on the fridge of life for being the biggest screw-up in the room. It's like, ha-ha, I win, you know? I mean, I can't understand that crap, you know? Because that kills guys like me. Because when I come in, I'm automatically sizing you up. Because my entire life is ran on a scoreboard. I've got a checklist, and I'm checking everything off so that I can't relate with you or you can't relate with me. Because no matter how bad it is for me, I'm the kind of alcoholic is that I want to totally, totally seclude myself from everybody around me, but be hugged while I do it. You know, I just want you all to come in here for a big one, but stay away from me, you know? And I'm that guy because I know loneliness kills me. But I know that if I have to face you one-on-one without anything in my system, that it seems to make more sense that way because when I'm around you and I'm not that way, I'm scared. And I'm the kind of guy when I get afraid, I don't hide in a corner. When I get afraid, I hurt people and I break people and I hurt things. And as a result of that, I'm a guy that came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd been over 250 street fights. And to the end of my drinking, on a lot of reservations around North Dakota, one of them which is the highest murder rate per capita in the United States. And I'm doing things to God's kids and seeing things done to God's kids that nobody's ever supposed to see or do. And I'm sitting there and I can't stop the nightmares and I can't quit thinking about the things I'm doing when I'm drinking, so I gotta keep drinking to cover up the things and blot out the madness in my mind. And I'm that guy again. And I wake up in the morning and I don't ever intend to be that guy again. I don't intend to be the guy that ends up collecting for drug dealers and kicking in people's houses and beating them in front of their families. I don't wanna be that guy. And I don't plan to be that guy in the morning when I wake up, but that's the guy that I am when I go to bed that night. And I got to blot it out enough so I don't have to remember it that night so I can actually close my eyes. And that's who and what I became. And I never wanted to be any of those things. I never wanted to be that guy. And I came in, I got to Alcoholics Anonymous in kind of an obscure way. I'm not a guy who got to go to treatment. I'm not a guy who got to go to a detox. I'm not a guy who got to go do any of those things. I'm a guy that got here on the faint chance of walking into a meeting, on the faint chance that a guy like me walks into the right meeting and is attracted by the right kind of people. Because I had just gotten out of jail, and when I was in jail, this is the week before I sober up, when I'm in jail, I swear off alcohol. There is no way I'm going to go back to jail again. There's no way I'm going to do this stuff again. So I'm done. I am absolutely done. Not happening anymore. So I'm quitting drinking, and I'm driving back to the house, and I realize, you know, those little Mickey wide mouths, they're kind of cute, you know? It's like a 10-year-old could drink them. You know, they're tiny, and you know, one of those wouldn't hurt me, you know? But the thing is, you go to the liquor store like I ended up that day, and they don't come with one of those. They come with five of their friends. And I'm not a guy who ever wants to break up a good friendship, so I have to bring them along, but then I'm cheap and frugal, and I realize for $4 more, I can get the entire case. But because I'm not drinking, that's going to last me for the next several months. because I'm just going to have one. Let me tell you what one little Mickey's wide mouth gets you. Insuation of a riot. Nobody ever listens to me. Nobody to this day. I have sponsees. It's like I'm talking to the wall. That night I say, let's burn this mother down. Everybody decides to listen. What the hell, you know? So I end up in this jackpot on this deal, and I'm like, ugh. And I'm sitting there getting ready to go back to jail, and I show back up, and they're looking at me like, did you forget your toothbrush? You know, I mean, it's just like, what the hell? I don't understand, you know? And I'm sitting there, and I'm trying to run through the events, and I'm like, how did this happen? I'm not drinking. Me not drinking ends up in insuation of a riot in jail. I don't know how you not drinking goes, but that's how it works for me. And I'm sitting there, and I don't understand it. And I walk into this meeting, and it was on a Thursday, and I hadn't showered since Sunday. And I was a construction worker at the time, so needless to say, there was no cool water cologne covering up the funk coming off of me. I was dirty. And by this time, towards the end of my drinking, I'm getting Kharkov vodka 175 for $9.98. And the guy at the liquor store is giving me a break when I buy it on sale, so he's giving me a case at $1 off a bottle. So what I'm doing every single night is I'm getting off work, and I've got that warm Kharkov sitting in the big cooler I have at work. And as soon as I get off work, I'm spinning the lid off, and you got that little thing inside. I had a Leatherman. I just popped that deal right out. That's how I handle it, and I just take it back. And I'm convinced that Kharkov has never seen a potato, ever. That stuff's made of like paint thinner and strain through dirty underwear. I mean, that stuff's terrible. And that's what I'm reduced to. And I walk into that meeting that Thursday, and I stink, and I'm hallucinating, and I'm messed up, and I'm crazy. And I walk into this meeting at 7:20, or at 8:58, or 7:58. That meeting started at 8:00. And as I'm walking in, this guy shakes my hand, and he says, "Welcome to me." And I'm not the kind of guy that anybody says welcome to anymore. And I walk into that meeting that night, and this guy gets up, and he starts telling his story, and I know it's a setup. Somebody's been watching me. Somebody's been seeing what's going on, because they're talking about the way that I feel in here. They're talking about the way that I feel when I'm looking around at the rest of the world and I can't figure it out. So I do what any alcoholic would do. I got up after the first speaker went, and I ran over to my buddy's place, and I grabbed that first beer, and I threw that first one back, and then I grabbed that second one, and I don't even think I finished it, because the machine is rolling, and it's spinning out of control, and the only thing I can think of is, what is wrong with you? What is wrong with you? I'm this guy with all this potential, and I had a congressional nomination to go to the Air Force Academy and play D1 football and wrestle D1, and I threw that all away. I had 27 scholarship offers across the United States, and I threw every one of them away. And I'm not the guy that wakes up in the morning and says that my drinking is more important than a scholarship. I'm not the guy that wakes up in the morning and says my drinking is more important to me than wrestling or playing football or doing anything like that. But see, that's the way I think in the morning. And after my actions kick in and I get that first drink on board and I spin out of control again, it's very, very clear what my actions are. All those things are less important than my drinking. And I came into that meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I ran out that night, and I went home and I called in sick to work because it was a Thursday, and I knew that there was going to be beer in the shop on Friday, and if I was going to have a shot, there was no way in hell I was going to be able to go to work the next day. And I was alone in the house, and I started going. By the next day, I'm starting to shake pretty bad. And by about 12 hours after that, I'm throwing up blood, and I'm shaking it out on the floor in my room, and I'm going into seizures, and I just want to die. And by this time in my life, I'm done with God. Because see, that's the thing that really freaked me out about Alcoholics Anonymous, is you have this God word. And when I would say God when I was new, I'd get this little pukey thing in the back of my throat. It was like, God, you know, I mean, I don't want it. And that's coming from a kid that his dad is a Southern Baptist. I mean, they invented God down there, okay? I mean, that's just the deal. And the people that disagreed with them were the Lutherans that my mom was, and they were in Missouri Synod, so that's practically Catholic. So, I mean, you're super, super strict. And I was the president of the National Lutheran Youth Fellowship League, if you can believe that. I was the number one graduation student of my confirmation class. I got to give a 15-minute sermon the next Sunday. And I had all kinds of people coming up to me and say, Calvin, your calling is going to be with the Lord. You have a natural ability to speak in front of people and everything else. And I'm like, you don't realize I was drinking the communion wine before I came out here, do you? You know, I mean, they just didn't get it, you know. And I already knew I was going to hell. I mean, I'm sitting there and I'm putting the face on and I know I'm going to hell because I did it in the church, you know. And I'm like, I'm doing all these things and I can't believe I'm doing these things. And I'm sitting there, and they're telling me that God's going to fix me. And so I signed that deal off, because I'm the worst kind of newcomer that can come into AA. The newcomer that goes, well, if God is so great, why are there wars? If God is so great, then why? Why are there rapes? Why is there molestation? Why about this? Why about that? If God is here and he's so wonderful, why didn't he kill me in the middle of the night when I'm begging him to, when I'm laying on the floor of this damn room, shaking and flopping around and pissing myself because I can't control anything in my body? Why didn't he kill me? If he was so great, he would have done it, because he knows that I'm not good. And that's why I hated everybody in AA, because when I came in here and you said God and you smiled and walked around spiritually holding your book and telling me to follow you, I realized at that moment it's because God works for good people, and that's why he works for people like you, and I'm not a good person, so he won't work for a guy like me. I just know it. So that's how I come into Alcoholics Anonymous. I come into AA, and I came in, I went to a meeting that next Thursday, and I slept maybe an hour and a half or 2 hours a night until that entire next week. And I walk into that meeting, and I'm coming up the sidewalk. And this didn't probably happen this way, but it's the way I remember it, so it's right. There was this huge circle of guys, and they're laughing, and ha-ha-ha-ha, and ho-ho-ho-ho, and they're doing this thing, and they're high-fiving, it seems, and good game, and they got this whole circle going. And the circle, as I'm walking up the sidewalk, goes, and it opens up, and like the sunlight's hitting the back of the circle, and this guy comes walking through, you know. And he comes down the sidewalk at me, and he puts his hand down, and he goes, hi, my name is Jeff. And he said, you're new here, right? You were here last week. And I said, yeah. Now, if he'd have came down the sidewalk, and he would have said, hey, you ran out in the middle of the meeting, man. You can't be here, because that was my biggest fear. Or if he would have said, oh, you had happy feet. If he'd have said anything like that to me at all, I'd have swung as hard as I could, and you'd have a different speaker tonight. But what that guy did is he stuck out the hand of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he brought me into it that night. And they asked me to read how it works at the meeting that night, and I was brand new. And I just knew that I was destined for greatness. Because after the meeting that night, that guy came up to me and he said, hey, when you read the eighth step tonight, a light came on for me, and I finally understood what it meant. And I was like, man, I'll read it for you every week if y'all want me to. You know, I was all excited. I'm ready to go start spreading the message of this how it's somethings at every meeting and every and AA across the world, you know. And that guy ended up becoming my first sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's kind of I've got a unique stance of that aspect in my recovery, because at that meeting, my first home group, there was a piece of that meeting that people would say, if you're willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. Now, I am less than 2 weeks sober, and I'm sitting next to my sponsor who shanghaied me that night, and I'm sitting next to him all perched up, proper, and everything, you know. And I had shaved all these patches that I had off my face. See, I had this nasty growth, and I didn't cut my hair, so I had this, like, crazy... I kind of looked like Don King and a Chia Pet crossed on crack, you know? So, I mean, I had this whole this deal, and I smelled horrible, and so I'm all shaved up, you know, and I got a nice goatee now, and you know, and I've got my best hat on, and I'm in this meeting, and that part of the meeting comes up, and he elbows me in the arm, and my arm goes into the air. And this guy from the boys' ranch comes up to me, and he says, hey, I was wondering if you'd be my mother effing sponsor. That's exactly how he asked me. And I went, you're going to coffee, right? You know, because I'd realized coffee was a big deal the last week, because 53 people asked me if I was going to coffee after the meeting. And And then they split coffee up, and all the guys went somewhere else, and all the girls went somewhere else. And there was a couple hot women at that meeting, you know. So I'm like, yeah, I'm going to coffee, you know. And I end up with a bunch of dudes, and they're talking to me about God, and I want to kill them all, you know. And I end up in this, and I end up in this spot, and I'm like, I know I'm supposed to go to coffee. I know that, you know. And the guy says, yeah. So I go over and I grab this new sponsor of mine and I say, hey, listen, this guy asked me to sponsor him. I don't know what to do. He goes, go tell him yes. Okay. And I'm sitting there thinking, I'm like, I barely even know what a sponsor is. Okay. And I know that you're supposed to be sober longer than somebody and that you're supposed to know something about this book. And so I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. He goes, oh, that's all right. He goes, you need to get busy in the steps. So the next Sunday, that Sunday of that week, he has me at his house, and we're going through the big book. And so I don't have a car, so I get a ride from my roommate out there, and I go out to meet this kid in the ranch. And I'm highlighting, and I'm reading everything. And as soon as I get done, I'm regurgitating it right back on this guy, you know. So as I'm going through it, he's going through it. And I'm sitting there, and I didn't realize, but the counselors get to hang out in the back because they don't leave you one-on-one alone with the kids, you know. And the counselor's hanging out in the back. And she comes up to me after he's went back to his pod and everything else, and she says, you seem to have a very profound knowledge of the big book and about AA. She goes, how long have you been sober? I said, about 6 weeks, you know? And her jaw hit the floor, and I said, hey, lady, some of us just catch on to this thing faster than others. And I'm off, and I'm working with other alcoholics. And what he did is he basically sponsored that guy through me. And if that guy called me and said anything, I'd said, I'll call you back in 5 minutes. And I was on the phone with my sponsor. And it taught me exactly what I was supposed to do here. It taught me exactly what I was supposed to do to be able to work with these other alcoholics. And that was going to be the most important aspect of my life. And that sponsorship was going to be the most important aspect of my life, no matter what. No matter what. And I'm sitting there, and I'm moving, and I'm rolling in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm doing all kinds of stuff, and I'm going to roundups, you know, and these AA guys, I hated them, because they would say, we're going to go do something fun, and I'm like, yeah, what, you know? And they're like, we're going to go talk at the treatment center. It's a Saturday, you know? And I'm like, I don't want to go talk at a treatment center. Because I start saying something, then you guys yell at me and tell me to shut up. And I got to listen to you the whole time. And I don't like you anyway, so you want you shut up, you know. And I hated those guys. And every time I saw them, I wanted to hit them. And when I was new, if you saw me smiling, it wasn't because I got something that the speaker said. It's because I was thinking about punching one of those guys in the mouth and watching them spit chiclets, you know. I mean, God. And what I ended up becoming is one of those guys, you know? So I'm like, today I'm like, I should just kick my own butt and be done with this thing, you know? Because what I didn't understand then that I understand now is that the God that I couldn't believe in was existing in the people around me. And that the thing that I couldn't wrap my mind around, the thing that I couldn't touch, the thing that was intangible to me was present in you. And I didn't get it. And every time you guys said God, I got more and more mad. And people would try to be cute with me, you know? And I mean, don't get cute with me. I'm smart, okay? Don't say, it says power on there. And I said, yeah, and it's a capital P, and there's a capital G on God. You can put a lipstick on a pig, but it's still a pig. I know you're saying God when you're saying power and everything else, so shut up, you know? And those guys, they try to trick me, and I'm like, don't try to trick me. I know what God is. God is evil. Because if you sin and you get really bad, he floods the earth and kills us all. If you really make him mad and you do a lot of dirty things with people, Sodom and Gomorrah, he burns your ass. And if you get too powerful, he sends a woman in to destroy you and cut off all your hair. I don't want him. And that's what I know about God. And the God that I believed in at that moment was not what I was trying to wrap my head around something that and make it. I'm one of those people that struggled for years in Alcoholics Anonymous because I never accepted my own version. I would hear something great that some speaker would say at some conference, or my sponsor would say to me, or some other guy that was sober less than me, but he seemed to have a better grasp on God, so I'll steal his and then not go to the same meetings he does and use his stuff. And that's what I would do. And I grabbed this conception of God that was other people's conception. And when you're calling on that at 2 a.m, it's a lonely damn place to be because you don't have your own belief. But I'm not going to tell you that because I don't want you to think I'm not one of those spiritual people in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because those are the guys that seem to be doing so well. Those are the ones that everybody seems to like and everybody says, hey, good job to after they get done talking. And see, I don't want you to think that I'm not that, so I'm going to pretend. And I'm a great pretender. I've been pretending my whole life. When the movie Scarface, When the movie Scarface came out, it was a very deep experience for me as a child. I told you, I'm a pretender. When I watched Scarface for the first time, and I was 6, I knew what I wanted to be. A drug dealer. And I wanted tigers in my lawn, and I wanted to just blow people up, and I didn't even know what that white stuff was, but I knew I wanted a whole bunch of it, you know? And I'm just excited, you know, because I live through movies. Because if I can pretend and I can be in your land over there, I don't have to be me. Because, see, I'm the guy who's not the right size, who's not the right shape, and who doesn't fit in. I'm the square peg trying to fit in the round hole. And I don't know how to feel, and I don't know what to do. And I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm trying to do this deal. And on the outside, I've got my AA resume right here for you. On the outside, I look like AA All-Star number one. I've got how many guys I sponsor on the list. I've got, I'm the chairman of the intergroup, past chairman of the intergroup. I'm the co-chairman of the state roundup. I have this many H&I commitments, Oh, and over here, I do this, and this. And you don't, so screw off. Because you can't say anything to me at all. Because, see, I got the resume right here, and if you're not doing something on my list, you don't have the right to say anything to me. And I started slowly dying of judgment in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I am separating myself from anything and everyone around me. And I am completely dying in the middle of this program. And on the outside, I look like a great AA member because you see me at all these conferences and you see me everywhere and I'm speaking here and I'm going there and I've got this panel. And on the outside, I look good. But when you go home to my house at night, it's not a very good place to be around me. And when my wife and my daughter are walking on eggshells around me and I'm 8 years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous and they're walking on eggshells around me. And they don't know what's going to come home that night. If it's going to be the happy, hey, let's go get a pizza guy, or if it's just leave me the hell alone guy. Because see, there's a God within me that I don't understand and I don't know and I don't believe, but he's there because he's keeping me in Alcoholics Anonymous by the actions that I take. If I would have varied or strayed away from those actions, I wouldn't be here tonight. Those actions kept me enough in Alcoholics Anonymous to exist here without the true belief that I now have today. And it was a scary place for me to be, so scary that when I was 8 years sober, I'm on the way with a gun to go murder another member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was calling people that night on the phone. And a guy answered the phone and he called me back when I was about 20 miles out of town on the way to this guy's place. And the guy calls me back. And I realize I'm not a spiritual giant in Alcoholics Anonymous. This whole God thing that you guys have grasped, if he apparently wasn't working because some other guy had to call me and tell me not to go shoot somebody. Duh, he was working through him. Oh, okay, yeah, that's great, you know. Because I want the phone call. I want a burning bush. I want something. And what? Because I'm not the guy that realizes that he works through you. I'm the guy that realizes that I work through me and I take the credit for it all, so therefore, I'm God. Because I play him every day in my life. See, I got a 6-year-old little girl, and if I look at the third step the way it says it is in the book, that he is going to be the father, and I'm going to be the child. That's what it says in the book. Well, it wouldn't make much sense if my little 6-year-old girl, Tiana, would pick me up in the morning and and take me over to school and drop me off. And then she's going to go manage two copier dealerships in North Dakota. And then she's going to come home that night, and she's going to make supper with me and my wife. And she's going to do that. And then after that, she's going to go through, and she's going to read me books, and she's going to put me to bed. And that's the way the night's going to go. That makes no sense at all. But I try to do it with God. It says he's the father, I'm the child. Why in the hell do I always try to be his daddy? I am not God's daddy, you know? And it's crazy because I see it that way. And when I'm in my delusional state of where I am with my alcoholism, I see myself as playing God. But the thing is I see it in hindsight, because while I'm doing it, I'm justified. Because, see, my judgments allow me to play God. I put them between me and him and me and you. So that's the only thing that I see. The only thing I get to see is the judgment in my life. I was one of those guys that was floating right out of Alcoholics Anonymous and didn't even realize and didn't even know it. And I'm sitting in the middle of my house one night, and my little girl, who I absolutely adore, jumps up on my lap, and her knee kind of hit me in the thigh a little bit. And I grab her by the shoulders, and I'm screaming at her face and asking her why the hell she's jumping on things. That's not who I wanted to be that morning. That's not what a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous is supposed to be doing, as far as the examples that are in front of me that I know. I didn't see anywhere in the book that says you're supposed to become a monster in your home. I didn't see anywhere in the book where it says you're supposed to terrorize your child and your wife. I didn't see that chapter. But I wrote it in my book. Thank God it was in pencil. Thank God it was in pencil. In the couple days before that day, my toilet got plugged, you know, and it wasn't me. But see, I'm sitting there, and the toilet's plugged, and my wife replaces my black plungers with the big nasty cup on the bottom, the ones you can suck a bowling ball through a garden hose with, you know. Those, she takes that out and she puts these damn decorative ones in there, you know, because they match the little strip of wallpaper around the top of the ceiling. And because they look nicer, you know? And so I'm in there, and I'm with this plunger and this decorative plunger, and the more I'm plunging, the more I'm getting mad. And there's water all over the place. And she goes, I have pretty good luck with it. Let me try. And I said, whatever you do, don't flush the toilet. And I throw her the plunger. And she's on there, and she's plunging it. I swear, it was like 6 or 7 times. And she hits the damn thing and flushes the toilet. And the water's coming out. And I grabbed my wife, and I threw her across the bathroom under the door right in front of my daughter. And she's a pretty strong woman. She picked herself up off the floor and went in the other room and didn't say a word. And I'm down in my den later on that night, and I'm spinning the revolver over on a .357 wondering why I shouldn't kill myself that day. And I'm sober, active, in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's where judgment takes a guy like me. Because, see, judgment allows me to separate myself enough from you where I can't see the presence of God in you. And judgment allows me to separate myself from me enough where I can't see it. See, that in the book it tells me that deep down in every man, woman, and child is a fundamental idea of God. Deep down, it says. Well, I think of that like an archaeologist. They got to dig and dig and dig, and they got to sift through, and they got to move the mud, and they got to move the sand, and they got to move all the crap out of the way, and finally they get down to the treasure and the gold. And when I get down to that, when I clear all the stuff out of the way, and that's what my inventory allows me to do, and that's when I turn myself over and third step in the morning that allows me to do, and that's what me going out and making these amends allows me to do, and that's what all of those things is. That's my way of digging all down to it, and when I get down to it, I finally get to get my hands on it, and when I get my hands on it, it allows me to see it within you. And I believe of the God within me seeing and recognizing the God within you. I think the Hindus call it namaste. And I believe in that today. Because, see, I'm the guy that doesn't always get to wrap my head around the idea completely. And I'll overgeneralize, and I'll push myself away from you and out of Alcoholics Anonymous. So today in Alcoholics Anonymous, I've got a lot of gifts in my life. And there's days it's a struggle for me. I swear there's times I have the phenomenon of craving of judgment. I just know it. I mean, because, you know, somebody comes walking in, and I'm like, look at that guy. Yep. He's talking to that new girl. Yeah. Too bad he's not wonderful like me. And look at that new girl. Short skirt. She's probably a prostitute, you know? I mean, my mind goes there, and I'm just, and I just scatter off, and all of a sudden, this guy's hitting on new girls, and of course it is, because she's telegraphing, and oh my God, what the hell's happening to me? You know, and I just freak out, and I just spin out of control, and I'm judging everybody and everything, and I just go nuts. And that's how I end up. And that's how I end up if I'm not taking the daily actions that the book tells me to take. It tells me little things like, these are thoughts which go with us. Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. It doesn't say conveniently. It says constantly. So that means that I got to take those things with me every day and try to take them in every aspect of my life. And the days that I do those things pretty well, I get to be a pretty good guy. The day I do those things pretty well is the days that I get the days I get to live in grace, something that is not of me, something I do not deserve. Because what I deserve is to not be standing here in front of you right now. But what I get to get through daily action and through a grace of God is I get to stand here among you people because he's present in the room. And I'm not somebody that ever would have thought he was present in the room. But today I know he is. And I was one of those people when I heard that life was going to happen to you in Alcoholics Anonymous, what I heard was, well, your family's going to start loving you again, and they're going to give you the keys to the car and their ATM card and tell you to go down to the store and pick up groceries because they love you, you know? And that no matter what, that all the people that you hurt, they're just going to be happy you're sober, and they're going to bring it in here for some of that good stuff. Yeah, it's going to be just like that. And it's going to be wonderful because you're sober. What they said was you're going to live life. And what that means is that things are going to happen that happens in people's lives. That means people are going to get sick. That means people are going to die. It means that bad things are going to happen. It means that people are going to make mistakes. It means that you're going to be up and down in your relationship with your wife. It means, well, for me, it's my wife, and for somebody else, it might be their husband or their wife, you know. And that's what it is with me. And it means that no matter what in my life, that I'm going to have to be able to live that life in a grace that is not of me. Because I'm the kind of guy, and I feel terrible about this. I was the kind of guy, when I was drinking one at a keg party, and a guy that was walking through spilled beer on my shoe. And when I was in college, I was 270. I had about 14% body fat. So I was a monster in college. And this guy spills a little beer on my shoe, and I grab him and I throw him out the front door of the house, and he hits the ground, and his head hits the ground, and it makes that cracking sound. And if you've ever heard that sound, you know what it feels like in your stomach when you hear it, because you think, oh my God, he's dead. And I threw that guy out of that house that night, and there was somebody there that was CPR and first aid. They were going to school to be a medic at the same party, and they grab this guy and they bring him around, and he ends up being okay, and they take him to the hospital, and he suffers a severe concussion. And the guy doesn't press charges because the guy's in the dean's list, and it was his first night ever drinking ever in his life. And he came there, and he had maybe a sip out of that cup, and he was afraid and he was scared. And I got this later from him because I found that guy made amends to him. And he spilled that night because I was running around the way I run around, and I'm not exactly easy to dodge. And the guy didn't press charges because he didn't want his parents finding out that he was at a party. I have a tendency to overreact to a lot of things. That's who and what I am. And that's especially exactly who and what I am without a presence of God in my life. And so I go through and I start trying to do things, and life is happening to me. And my father-in-law, I get married, my in-laws are wonderful. I mean, when most people, when you say in-laws are coming to visit, they're like, oh, I'm going to the garage, you know. Me, I can't wait, because my mother-in-law is like 5'2", you know. And she grabs me and she gives me this big hug and this big kiss every time she sees me. And my father-in-law is a Navy guy, you know. You know, so tough in the Navy that he never got a tattoo. Because he said his mom would have killed him, you know. And seriously, all those other guys in the ship are trying to get him drunk, and as soon as he saw a tattoo needle come out, he'd start knocking people out. I mean, he's a tough guy. And this guy that I love, that's closer to me than my father is he ends up getting pancreas cancer. And for anybody who knows what that is, it's about an 80% mortality rate within 6 months of you finding out that you have it. And he's living with us, and he's doing all this stuff, and he's going through chemo, and I live in a twin home. I don't live in a big fancy house like some of the other people at this meeting. I live in a twin home. It's a three-bedroom twin home, and so it's me and my wife and my little girl and my in-laws, and they move in, and they're in my den, okay? Well, that's where I meet sponsees on Sundays and stuff like that, and that's kind of my little, I go there and I kind of pray and meditate and stuff. It's my room, you know, I got my shotguns on the wall and stuff, you know, I mean, man stuff, you know, and my cigar humidor, and sure, every once in a while I just grab dead things and throw them in there, you know, because it's my room, you know, and they're in my room, and I'm sitting there, and see, I've got this nice TV. I love my TV because I'm a movie guy, you know? And I've got this 50-inch DLP high definition. Sweet. And my father-in-law, unfortunately, I have AMC at home, which means it's American Movie Classics. So he's watching Torah, Two Rivers Over Iwo Jima. He's watching every damn black and white movie, war movie, any movie that sucks. You know, they're all terrible, and John Wayne, and I hate John Wayne, you know, he's terrible, and I'm sitting there, and I call my sponsor, and I'm done. Now, granted, I've got three other TVs in my house, okay, but he's watching it on my big TV, and he's sick from all the chemo and everything else he's going through, and I'm pissed, so I call my sponsor, and I'm, Bob, yeah. He's on the damn TV again, and he's got the thing, and then Iwo Jima, and crap, you know? And I'm just furious, and he goes, oh, I'm sorry. Are you going through chemotherapy? And I was like, no. So I sat down and watched Torah one more time. He ended up coming through that thing pretty well. And 2 weeks ago, we just found out that he's got it again. And he's back at my house. He'll be there on Monday. I get home Sunday night, and he'll be at my house on Monday. And I called my sponsor when I found out that he had cancer again, and he said, you get a second chance. And I said, what are you talking about, man? I handled that first time great. He said, maybe this time you'll handle it with a little more love, tolerance, and grace. And I'm pretty sure I will. I'm pretty sure I will. Because, see, there's that little line in the 10th step that says, love and tolerance of others is our code. And when I first read that, I got excited, because I thought it meant that means I get to accept you because you're all jerks, you know? And that I need to learn to love and tolerate you. That's wonderful. And that line is in the book for me. It means that I get to be here because love and tolerance of others being our code means that you may love and tolerate me no matter who and what I am. That there's a God for me even though I was a bad guy when I got here. It means that there's I finally learned to love myself in Alcoholics Anonymous after I started to learn to love you first. And it was a pretty interesting thing The Lord's Prayer is something that's pretty big for me, and it's in all over the place in Alcoholics Anonymous right now. It's not being said at meetings, and that just drives me nuts, you know? I mean, it just does, and I just want to shake those people and tell them that they're dumb. I mean, dummy, you know? I mean, just put it on there. It's supposed to be there, and the reason why it's supposed to be there is for me. And I know that sounds selfish, but I'll explain it to you, because if you're anything like me, when I heard, forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us, it means that I had to go out and do amends work. It means I had to go out and start forgiving the people around me and forgiving them for the things that they've done to me in my life, that I had to start doing that before I was ever going to feel free. And that I got to start doing those things, and I got to start having those things happen in my life. And man, I'll tell you, that is an amazing gift. It's an amazing, amazing gift for me. And, you know, that little girl that I was screaming in her face a couple years ago, I coach her soccer team now. And so I've got all these little 5 and 6 year old girls running around, you know. And my team is a juggernaut. We're undefeated through 2 seasons. My daughter's high score of goals in a single game is 13. We win by an average of 22 points of margin of victory. We destroy other 5 and 6 year old girl teams. Destroy them. They do not have a chance. This season alone, my daughter scored 5 goals, 11 goals, 7 goals. And 9 goals in the games that we played. Right now, her current average is averaging about half of the total points scored by the team. A good friend of mine in Alcoholics Anonymous is a recruiter for a women's Olympic team in soccer. And I told him, I said, hey, Steve, I'm going to send you some game tape. And he laughed. He thought I was kidding. And I said, no, I'm serious. I'm going to make a highlight reel, and I'm going to send it out, you know, because it's time already, you know. People need to start getting their offers ready because we're going. And I'm not going to let her tear her shirt off like Brandi Chastain did in the Olympics. That was disgusting. My girl will handle it with class. She's going to headbutt somebody. So, you know, today my life is richly blessed. And it's because of those steps, and it's because of my sponsor, and it's because of the God I get to see and notice within you. And it's because of all the great, great gifts that are present and very available in this program. If you're in the room tonight and you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous, you don't have a sponsor, for God's sakes tonight, please do not leave here tonight without one. You don't have to get into that whole thing. Well, I need to find the perfect one. That's great. His name will be Corner. You know, that's what's going to happen if you wait. Name will be Corner. You'll find him and you'll be laying there and he'll make you pretty later on. If you don't have a sponsor, please get one. If you don't have a home group, get one. It's a place where I get to live and belong. It's a place where I get to coexist, where I have accountability and love from the other people in my group. Because I'll guarantee you, when stuff goes wrong in my life, people from my home group, they show up and they make things better for me. When I got hurt a few years ago, and guys from my home group showed up and they mowed my lawn and they shoveled the snow off my driveway. And one guy came in and scrubbed the floors in my house, because that's one of the things I do at my house to help my wife out. The guy came in, he got on his knees, and he scrubbed the floors of my house. And I made those bonds with people in my home group in Alcoholics Anonymous. So if you're out there tonight and you're wondering if you have this thing, or you're wondering where you're ever going to feel like home, guess what? You're here. You're home in Alcoholics Anonymous. The shortest paragraph in the big book is on page 88, and it says, it works, it really does. And whatever it is, as you go through the steps, as you go through the men's process, as you go through all those things, as you pray and meditate, as you get to finally come to a comprehension of something that is personal to you, that is greater than you, it ends up coming around to be something that works, because it really does. Thank you for my sobriety. I love you all.